Hi, everyone, and welcome to Dev Raga Personal Finance. My name's Dev Raga, and in this episode, we have a special guest. Now, the story behind this guest is fascinating. Actually, I have a very avid follower and listener who has reached out to me many, many months ago. And, you know, sometimes we chat, usually by Facebook, Twitter, or something like that. And the chat is usually, you know, non-financial because the listener is a doctor, practicing clinician in the state of Victoria. And one of their relatives is actually a day trader. And they said, hey, look, would you like to speak to someone who's does day trading as a form of living or as a form of part-time income? And I said, oh, that sounds interesting. Because it's not something that I do. It's not something that I know much about. And I think part of this finance channel is all about growing perspective, growing knowledge, try to get different perspectives. So with that said, we've got AG. So welcome, AG. How are you?
Hello, Dev. It's an honor to be on here. And I'm going good. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. And I guess the context is in today's episode, AG has kindly volunteered to discuss his experience with day trading with a focus on alternative investments like cryptocurrency. So we've got a fair bit of crypto related questions for him and also specifics about day trading. And of course, we'll go into his own personal investing philosophy. So AG, are you ready to get started?
I'm ready to go.
All right, let's get started. Now, if you're new to the podcast, remember the three main aims: education, empowerment, and entertainment. And if you have any questions or comments, the best way to reach me is via Twitter or Facebook. And thanks for listening. Now, AG, just for disclosure for our listeners, as I mentioned before, AG is related to one of our listeners who's been a long-term listener, and thank you to that person. And thank you for connecting me to AG, because I haven't really focused much on cryptocurrencies. I've done a couple of episodes, maybe one episode on blockchain technology, and I don't think to date I've done a real detailed episode on day trading. So I think rather than me talking about it, it's always good to get a perspective or someone who actually does it. So AG, tell us a little bit about yourself. Is day trading and trading cryptocurrencies, is that your mainstream way of making money? And tell us about your background and how you got into it.
Hello. Yeah. So I go by Trader AG. And in regards to day trading, it's definitely not my main source of income just yet. That is the plan in the future. But as of now, I'm only 24 years old. And whilst I was in university, I studied finance and economics and definitely had quite a knack for investments. And that's why I found myself in management consulting, specifically in finance. And I'm definitely enjoying that a lot. However, throughout working, I definitely always had a passion for starting a side hustle of some sort. And I tried a few, and I guess I just fell in love with day trading. And my longer term plans would definitely be to eventually not have to rely on a full-time 9-to-5 job, source myself through the profits that I make in day trading, as well as also just normal investing as well.
Right. Okay. So you do have a current full-time job in traditional work, you know, I suppose 9-to-5. So when you say you do some day trading or crypto trading, do you do most of that after hours, after your work, or do you do it in your lunch break? Or, I mean, which markets are you targeting here? Because I guess time zones will be an issue unless it's crypto, which is 24/7.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. So with cryptocurrency, it is 24/7. So I do have the luxury of setting up plays any time of the day that I want. I usually will trade New York session, which for us Australians starts 11 p.m. So it's a bit late, but at least it's after work. So that's usually when I'll be looking at for my set, my trades to go on and, you know, take profit or hit the stop. But outside of that, I work from home. So whenever I'm having a downtime at work or I have some spare time, I'll always have the charts up on one of my monitors, seeing what's there and what plays there are to take in preparation for the New York session to open.
Right. So that's a huge advantage. So just to clarify, your traditional job, you work from home. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I think COVID definitely helped a lot of us corporate people with work from home. I think most jobs have when they went to work from home, they've stayed work from home. So I have the luxury of working from home 5 days a week, which I understand a lot of people would not have that luxury. But yeah, with that comes obviously a lot of spare time in terms of travel and cooking, where I can dedicate that to day trading and other side.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hustles.
Right. Okay. So that's pretty interesting because obviously in the media, particularly late 2023 and 2024, and we're recording this in January 2024, and this episode will air in early March, a lot of people that have been working from home since COVID have kind of gone back to work. I mean, there's been some mandates about maybe 1 or 2 days back in the office and 2 to 3 days at home. So in your case, you've just been lucky enough and I suppose fortunate enough to not have any of those mandates and be able to work entirely from home.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think a few of my corporate friends have had required to go back to work 3 days a week. But I guess the nature of the industry I'm in, which is consulting, a lot of our clients will be interstate or even international. So they haven't found a huge need for us to go back into the office. And that's why I guess, yeah, I have been one of the lucky ones to be able to work from home 5 days a week. I just did want to touch on that though. With day trading, there's many forms of day trading. And eventually I will want to turn into a bit more of a swing trader who would only take maybe 2 or 3 trades a week. So it's definitely not something that you would need to be at home for during your 9 to 5, looking on the charts 24/7, which I think a lot of people may think day trading is like that. But yeah, just wanted to preface that.
Yeah, so that's a good segue. And my next question was going to be, what is day trading? Because that's exactly what I thought. And I'm sure majority of listeners, dare I say, will probably say day trading is basically someone sitting in front of a computer, mostly 24/7, looking at charts and trying to arbitrage price differences and try to profits and crystallize those profits based on those price differences. Take advantage of time zone, take advantage of geography, take advantage of currency trading, for example. So can you did mention there's various types of day trading. Can you just go into that briefly about the various types and perhaps go into what do you mostly day trade? So is it stocks? Is it bonds? Is it currency? What do you actually day trade?
And I think, yeah, very good, Dev. I think you know quite a little bit about what is involved in day trading and the underlying price of the stock and how it could be affected on the futures market. So essentially trading is speculating on the futures price of an underlying asset on the futures market. And there's quite a few types of trading, from the lowest time frame, which would involve scalping, which is essentially you're looking at very minuscule moves depending on news events that happen. And then as you go higher and higher, it can go all the way up to day trading and then swing trading, which is eventually what I would want. So day trading, just to, I guess, explain that, day trading is where your trade is done and most likely you're exited from the trade in that day. And then swing trading can take weeks, months, or even maybe a year to play out. So that's eventually what I would want to get into, where maybe I enter a trade at the start of the week. And then depending on how that week goes and where the liquidity is, that trade is closed by the middle of the week or the end of the week. Just because I find that it definitely allows you to have a bit more breathing room with your stop loss, with price being manipulated to take you out. And swing trading, I think, is just a little bit more higher chance. It's just when everyone gets into day trading, they always want to scalp and make that quick play within 5 minutes. And yeah, I just think it's scalping for me is not a good method of day trading because a lot of emotions can get involved when you're seeing hundreds of dollars go up and down based on very minuscule moves. So I think for me, I didn't personally like scalping and I'm moving more towards swing trading with even larger account size or lot size.
And I think the the term scalping, I mean, really, you have to be trading huge volumes to see much profits from those minor change in price fluctuations, I assume, because otherwise what's in it for the trader, right? Less any transactional costs, yeah?
Yeah, 100% right. You'd have to be using extremely high margin, which is the amount of money you yourself put down on the table. Or if you don't have very high margin, then I'm sure you've heard of the term leverage, which is really hated on in the trading space. But yeah, people who are in scalping will usually use very high leverage to try and, I guess, amplify a very small move into big gains. But I think even when I was first starting out, every successful trader knows that, yeah, when you're starting out, if you use high leverage on scalping, it usually doesn't end well. So I'm not a big fan of it unless, yeah, you're definitely on the charts like a hawk, I guess, trying to snipe movements based on news or certain events that are happening in the world. But I like to trade based off liquidity, which is there regardless of news or exchange events or whatever's going on in the world.
So I suppose, you know, like when the stock market opens, and well, let's talk about stocks for a sec, but I suppose you can trade anything, right? You can trade coffee beans and soybeans if you wanted to, I suppose. But let's stick to stocks for now. Is, you know, when the stock market opens, you know, the ASX opens at 10 a.m. and by 10:30 it's up by 40 points, and then by 10:45 it's neutral, and then by 10:50 it's down by 20 points. So, you know, there are people out there who literally wait by the computer during those moments, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell, and take advantage of those price movements. Now, I've just, you know, made up some random numbers, but, you know, that's one form of trading. But your form of trading that you're more accustomed to, it's still called day trading, but it's over longer periods of time, hence it's called swing trading. Do you do any trading of commodities as well? Oil or gold or anything like that? Or?
And that's a good segue to go into what I trade, which is I trade everything. I trade indices, stocks, and crypto. But more specifically, I've found a lot of success with sticking to one market. And recently, I'm sure as you've heard, or many people are starting to talk about, the crypto bull market is probably slowly getting started. So I've been focusing a lot more on Bitcoin because there's a lot of liquidity there. A lot of new players are joining, and the volatile moves are what a trader loves to see. So I've been focusing more on Bitcoin, and I think I find a little bit more success with Bitcoin because the crypto market is not as efficient yet. So when it comes to indices or stocks or Forex, those markets are very efficient where they have algorithms in place to quickly refill any inefficiencies. And in crypto, because it's not as regulated yet, those inefficiencies take a little bit longer to get filled. And that's where retail day traders like me can come in and help fill those inefficiencies. That's why I think I find day trading crypto a little bit easier. I'm sure once crypto is regulated, the markets will become a lot more efficient. And then I will definitely have to change my trading strategy to account for a very efficient market like Forex and indices.
Yeah. So I guess the concept that I'd like to highlight to everyone, that's actually a broad concept, isn't it? So in more mature markets, in most things, mature markets like the United States, North American markets, and industrialized countries, their stock exchanges, the opportunity potentially is less because the markets are kind of as efficient as they possibly could, you know, by definition. Whereas in more immature markets, for example, in African markets, in the Indian subcontinent or in the Southeast Asian, I suspect people can take advantage of that volatility. So volatility for you, AG, is your friend, right? I mean, you would love volatility. You want more volatility, right, in any market?
Yeah. No, so you're absolutely right there. Volatile markets are for sure my friend. And it definitely depends on the trading strategy you use. So for now, whilst I'm in crypto and day trading Bitcoin, my strategy is a bit more based towards an inefficient market. But I'm sure as crypto starts to get more regulated and I'm not able to trade it as I once did, I'll have to change my strategy to be more prepared for an efficient market such as Forex, which is something I'm looking into. But at the end of the day, I do think baseline strategy works either way. It just really depends on how much you allow for your targets.
Sure. No, fair enough. And I guess the next question is, and sticking to the topic of day trading, and I've got a specific questions on crypto coming up as well, but how do you compete with the big people, right? The big players. They have faster connections. They have more time on their hands. I mean, the average listener who's listening to this podcast channel, you know, just wouldn't have time because, you know, most of them have got, you know, full-time jobs. Most of them are healthcare workers, professionals who may not have the opportunity to work from home. But you're competing against professionals. And how do you do that? Or are you using the specific form of swing trading you talked about where time is kind of your friend and you're not really scalping? Because, you know, there's a lot of professionals out there who do it day in, day out with faster connections, more computer power, more algorithmic trading. So how do you compete against that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess those big people would be called market makers who essentially have the power to manipulate a market with however they wish. And I think this definitely takes a lot of time to study and understand. And I think, yeah, me myself, I would always give myself at least an hour a day of some videos and courses that I would want to watch. And throughout 2 years, I think I've come to a pretty good understanding of how markets work and why price heads in the direction that it does. So the best way to compete with these market makers is to think like one. A lot of traders based on emotions. And if they see prices absolutely skyrocketing, they might want to jump into a long to chase those profits, but it could just be market makers pushing up price. So the retail trader gets into a long and allows the market maker to fill their order for the reverse position, if that makes sense. So that's a good way to think about it, is that these market makers, it could be one very big market maker who, they can't just enter the market like me and you. They would have orders worth millions or almost billions of dollars. And if they wanted to enter a market, have price reach a certain direction, they would need thousands, maybe millions of people doing the opposite move so their bags or orders are able to get filled. So essentially, whenever I look at a chart, I always try to think of myself as the market maker and look at any candlestick patterns or areas of liquidity or inefficiencies left behind, and any smart money concepts that I can see on the chart as to why a market maker might be trying to convince a retail trader that price is going in the opposite direction that they would want it to go. But there's no jogging around it. It definitely does take a lot of time. And I think that's why there's a stat of something like 90% of day traders usually don't make it. But I think the best way to go about it is just watching charts, understanding what's happening, and then thinking like a market maker when you can.
Right. So you mainly trade in the North American markets, or do you also do trading in the Australian markets in terms of time zones?
Yeah. So I usually, with crypto, because it's 24/7, it's a bit of a weird or a bit of a funny one. I find that there's most of the volatility will come in when New York market opens at 11 p.m. for Australia time. But before that, I have all the time to just set up the trade. So I'll mark out my ranges, mark out my inefficiencies, and whatever else my strategy may involve. And then I'll have the order in, and then I'll hope that it gets triggered in the New York market. But it could be before that. It just really depends on when the volatility and the liquidity comes into the market. And when, with crypto, because it's 24/7, it really just depends on when a big player decides to wake up and join in.
Right. Okay. And outside of crypto, do you borrow money as well to invest? Do you leverage?
I do leverage. Yes. I'm a fan of leverage. I think it's a good way to allow yourself to not put a lot of your own skin in the game, but also utilize the gains of having that leveraged amount. It's just the best way to go about leverage is always having a specific stop loss in place. And every day trader, when they first open up any book, they'll always learn that you only risk 1% of your account. So even if I'm using leverage or not, if my stop loss was to get triggered, I would only lose 1% of my total account. So if I trade with a $10,000 account, I would only want to lose $100 per trade and ideally win maybe $200 per trade.
And that $10,000 as an example, is that your money or is that including all the borrowed money?
So that would be my money. So I would have a $10,000 account. And then when I enter, say, for example, if I need to buy or one Bitcoin, I would maybe put $2,000 of my own money, leverage it up to 40,000 so I can buy one Bitcoin. So that'd be 20x. But I'd make sure I have a stop loss in place for only losing 1% of my account, which would be $100. There can be a lot of details and when you go into it, but at the end of the day, you don't want to be risking too much per trade because you can go on losing streaks. And if you see your account half after two lost trades, it definitely hurts your trading psychology and your emotions. And that's where all the bad sides of trading come into play with revenge trading and whatnot.
Yeah, correct. So you mentioned crypto, and this is sort of a good segue to go into that, I suppose. Now, I have some crypto. It was actually a bit of a meme back in 2021. It was highest ever or something like that. And I put a post up, opened a account and bought some random Bitcoin. And I don't own much at all. And in fact, I just find it quite comical, the whole thing. So I'm not a huge fan of it. And I think majority of listeners, dare I say, whether they're fans of it or not, won't have most of their wealth in it. Most of their wealth will either be in property or stocks or superannuation, which is invested somewhere else. Can you just explain what the utility you see behind cryptocurrency? And I know there's cryptocurrencies and there's Bitcoin, there's Ethereum, who are the two dominant sort of players. And then, of course, you've got the whole blockchain technology. Is there significant current utility, for example, in the world of finance where you are as a financial consultant for blockchain technology? And is that different to the utility of the actual cryptocurrency? Are they two separate concepts or are they kind of all the same thing?
Yeah, so to answer your question, I'm definitely not a huge technical nerd when it comes to the utility behind cryptocurrencies. However, I would have to say that I think the utility would be the same, whether it's for the individual or for institutions who wish to adopt blockchain technology. And at the end of the day, essentially, it's a digital store of your wealth where you're the rightful owner of your hard-earned money. And it's not subject to a bank where if they happen to go bankrupt or there's a bank run, that your assets may be used to pay off their debts and then you don't have access to your money. So essentially, it's a store of your own money in a decentralized space and you are your own bank. Another very, I guess, big utility behind it is that cross-border payments are almost instant. So I don't know if you've ever tried, but in regards to my business as well, whenever I've tried to actually pay someone overseas through just one of my big four banks, it's actually extremely difficult. I get a lot of fees involved and it almost takes, I think, a week to settle. Whereas with cryptocurrency, with Bitcoin, I have a wallet address. The person I want to send money to across the world has a wallet address. I just send it to that. No other third party is involved and they should receive that within 1 minute with much lower fees as well. So I think that definitely has a very big place in institutions, especially when they're sending through very large amounts of money. I'm sure that they would have their own methods of getting money transferred internationally. But I think, for small businesses who are trying to send money internationally, I think crypto has a space in the world for sure.
AG mentioned the term bank run, which is kind of what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, right? I think it was in 2023, which I'm sure AG is aware of, but most listeners may not have heard of it. But basically what a bank run is, let's say all of us have money in one bank and all of a sudden people start withdrawing all of their money out, all of them all at once, then the bank simply runs out of money because they don't physically have that much money to fill out all the orders for every single person. So to give an example, Commonwealth Bank, you know, might have a million customers as an example, and each customer might have $1 million in the bank. That doesn't mean they have a million multiplied by a million in the bank ready to go. They only have a small portion of that. And if everyone wants their money back, that's called a bank run. Am I right, AG? Is that like a simplified version of what a bank run is? And essentially what you're saying is, with cryptocurrency or hopefully with blockchain technology, even if everyone wanted their crypto back, your strategy is, well, it should be in your own hard wallet. So you are kind of your own bank. So you're not making a run on anyone. It's there. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's why I think if you believe in, or if you invest in cryptocurrency and you believe in the utility behind it, where you are your own bank, you shouldn't be holding any of your crypto on an exchange, for example, CoinSpot, SwiftX, the Australian, any exchanges. I believe they're all amazing exchanges and they're great for trading and buying your cryptos. But at the end of the day, if you believe in what cryptocurrency is meant for, you would have your own hardware wallet. I have mine right next to me. And that is where I store my money and store my wealth. Yeah, I'm not susceptible to anything like a bank run. And I can go to sleep comfortably knowing that my money is in my control on my hardware wallet.
Right. And just to clarify, if someone breaks into your house and takes away that wallet from you, can they have your crypto or is it still locked away in that wallet and there's no way for them to access it?
Yeah, so that's a great question because I think there's actually a term, I don't know exactly what it's called, but yeah, with a hardware wallet, you have to write a seed phrase of 24 randomly generated words. So I recommend writing that down on a piece of paper and storing it, you know, in your wallet or maybe not in your wallet, somewhere in a safe space. Mm-hmm. And then with that hardware wallet, you can only ever transfer into it and out of it with the wallet physically. And if someone has stolen it and they want to set it up on their computer to withdraw the funds, they would need to enter the seed phrase. So right. as long as you have that seed phrase, your funds are safe.
Which is kind of a two-factor authentication, right? So you need the actual money, but you also need a code on top of it to access it. So in theory, if I got your wallet, for context for listeners, AG is anonymous as well, so I can't see him at the moment. So this is all just anonymous, which makes it even more interesting. But if I could get your wallet and if I could get your seed phrase, then would I be able to get access to your crypto in that hard wallet?
Then I'd be in very big trouble. Yeah, you'd have access to all my crypto. Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, a while ago, I was actually speaking to a medical student who I think now must be an internal resident who's actually engraved their seed phrase in three separate places. They've got three separate lockers in three separate banks and they've got their hard wallet for their BTC separately somewhere else, which is worth a significant amount of money because I think they entered the market when the BTC was worth, I think, hundreds of dollars. Now it's in the thousands, if not, I think 40,000 or something. So they're obviously quite wealthy at the moment. But they're so strategized this so that even if one person breaks into one locker or there's a fire or something and that seed phrase has been stolen, they've got the three bank lockers has to go completely down. People have to get access to those three, combine it, and then get access to the hard wallet, which is yet another secret place because it's worth a lot of money, right? Now, here's my question to you, and this is what I don't understand about cryptocurrency, right? If this person who's, you know, probably worth $20, $30 million, whatever it is, has to do this level of protection to store their BTC, which is completely fine. And, you know, a lot of people say BTC especially, or cryptocurrency, has all the forms and features of gold, which is a store of wealth, okay? So I'll give everyone that. I'll give everyone that. My question is, what's the utility? Because BTC or cryptocurrency, I suppose, is still being tied to fiat, right? Because, you know, what's BTC worth? Everyone goes, well, it's worth about 40,000 USD, which is fiat. So in which case, how does this person who's on paper, theoretically, potentially worth $20, $30, $40 million, access their money? Because to access it, they need to sell it and they need to convert it to fiat? Or do you see a future where they sell it and exchange it for something else rather than fiat? How does that work?
Yeah, that's an amazing question again. And all of us in the crypto space, we actually don't really, we're not big fans of, as you were saying, Bitcoin being measured in USD because it defeats the purpose of it as a store of value. It should just be, I have 3 Bitcoin instead of I have $100,000 or whatever. So that's a great point. And I think, yeah, there already is, it already is in place where you can use Bitcoin to purchase everyday, day-to-day expenses, for example. But then in that case, you would have to hold your wealth on an exchange. So you can hold it on something like CoinSpot. You have your, you know, Bitcoin there, and then you can get a CoinSpot debit card, which the, you don't have to switch the Bitcoin into AUD. It can stay as Bitcoin and you can still use that card. Just tap it as you would and it'll take out the AUD, obviously with a fee, and it'll use that Bitcoin for your everyday expense. So I think that's obviously a great feature. And I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done there. I think there could be something such as utilizing your Bitcoin on a card when it's held on a ledger, which might make it make a bit more sense as to why people hold cryptocurrencies. But yeah, as you said, the market is still very immature and there's still a lot more work to be done. But yeah, for someone who's early or relatively early, I still am a very big fan of where this market is headed.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And look, for those listeners out there who might know the exact answer to that, I'd be curious for you to reach out, because that's something that I can't get over, because you kind of, it's a bit like having $20, $30 million of money in your bank account and not being able to do anything with it because, one, you're worried that it's going to crash the next day and therefore start becoming worthless, or it's going to go up in value in the future and therefore you don't spend it, right? Which is the opposite of inflation. It's deflation, right? And we don't like deflation because, you know, if people think money rises in value over time, no one would spend money. And it's spending that creates the economic cycle, that creates GDP, that creates jobs. It's an economic cycle. I spend money, I buy products. Those products and services are created by other human beings. Those other human beings work in those companies. Those companies generate profits, create more products, I buy more products. It's a feedback loop. Whereas if I have something sitting in a safe, like gold is an example, which, you know, people use that as an example equivalent of BTC or crypto, then it's just sitting there. And if I don't want to spend it because I think it's going to go up in value over time, then I'm not really contributing to society. And I just don't see the utility behind it. And maybe it will happen. Obviously, there's smarter people out there than me who will say, Dev, you're an idiot. There's utility out there. Banks are using blockchain technology. And I get all that. And there's a very high level sort of advanced, you know, institutions that use, I'm sure there is some utility there, but it's a difficult bridge for me to cross. And that's why I don't have most of my money in crypto. Now, with that said, I've got more questions for AG. We'll just take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to him about the cost of trading cryptocurrency. We briefly went into it. And then we're going to go into more personal things like net worth, crypto, non-crypto, long-term, short-term goals, AG's income. How do they go about their saving? Do they have traditional investments? So we'll go into a lot about that. AG, I've got plenty of time. You got time?
I've got time.
Too easy. All right, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll address those issues. You're listening to an episode, an interview with AG about day trading and cryptocurrencies. Be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Devraga Personal Finance, an interview with AG about day trading and the crypto markets. We've talked a fair bit about crypto and day trading and some of the basic concepts. We talked about arbitrage, leverage, stop loss orders, bank runs. What about AG? So what do you traditionally invest in? I mean, is majority of your net worth tied up in crypto and sort of stock market? Or do you do some traditional stuff like, you know, long-term ETFs, individual stocks, buy and hold, value investing? Can you tell us a little bit about where's your net worth tied up in at the moment?
It's a good question, and definitely one that I put a lot of time into. So as of today, most of my net worth is into crypto. I have just over six figures in crypto. I also have a fraction of that in a long-term ETF just on Vanguard, where I just invest DCA into that every week and I don't really think too much about that one. And then I also own one property. I have a relatively well-diversified portfolio, but definitely as I'm 24 years old and putting a lot of time into the crypto markets and day trading, I've definitely got more of a risk-on approach in that market, and therefore I have more of my net worth in the crypto markets.
So I guess from your net worth split, I mean, I'm assuming when you say you have one property, you know, that's got a mortgage against it.
Correct. Yep.
So, or have you fully paid that off?
That has a mortgage attached to it. Yes.
Sure. Okay. So you got that property, working towards paying that off. Is that somewhere that you live in?
No, that's purely investment purposes.
Investment, right. And then you've got some crypto and you said you got some sort of ETFs on the side. You're 24. For perspective, for healthcare workers listening in, particularly medical students, junior doctors, and for everyone else who's non-medic, the equivalency here is AG is kind of the same age as someone who graduates out of med school after about 6 years, if they're getting to university, year one medical school at the age of 18. So 18 plus 6 is 24. You graduate out of medical school, you come out with a debt, probably around 50 grand, if not more. And then you get your internship position with an income of about anywhere between $70,000 to $100,000 based on how much you work. So in comparison, I would say you're ahead of majority of doctors who are the same age as you. And that's relevant because your relative is a doctor who's an avid listener of me. And my understanding is there are people in your immediate family who are studying to become medicine, right? Obviously, you want to be anonymous and I don't want to go into specifics, right? So ironically, and I think this is what a lot of people probably won't understand until they listen to this, is AG, you're in a better financial position as a 24-year-old than a vast majority of graduating new doctors, full stop. Now, if you're a postgraduate doctor, it's even better for you because if you're postgrad, you're probably anywhere between 24 to 30 years old by the time you graduate out of medical school, because postgrad people have actually got undergrad, started working for a while and done postgrad, or they've done undergrad and then postgrad, which is 4 and 4, 8 years. So, you know, by the time you graduate, you're looking at about 25 to 28 to 30 years old. So hats off to you, even though you've taken a slightly anti-Devraga approach to all this by doing that little day trading and crypto, and sounds like your relative hasn't had much influence over what they've listened about what I practice and preach. And by all means, I'm all for diversity and I'm all for listening to other people's opinions. So congratulations on that. My next question is, are you going to play this game? Because you've already mentioned pre-break that it is risky, right? What you're doing is risky, right? You never put more than 1% of your you know, money in your account, trading account, into whatever you're doing. So, you know, potentially in the next 3, 4, 5 years, you could hit it big, or you might be able to build up that day trading account and, you know, mid six figures maybe. Are you willing to risk that, or are you going to change your tune and go, I've made my money, now I'm going to take the traditional route, which is the ETF strategy? What's your game plan here, you know, short, medium, and long-term play?
Yeah, no, this is a good question, and definitely something that I myself am working on in the next, I guess, 3 to 5 years, or have a timeline. But yeah, essentially my goals are to, the six figures I have in crypto, we're coming up on a bull run. I want to try my absolute best to make that into as much money as I can. However, going to bed at night with that much of my net worth tied up into crypto is definitely very risky. I will 100% admit that. So once I have, as you said, maybe hit it big, I would diversify out of crypto, diversify more into property, safer investments, Vanguard ETFs. I might even dabble a little bit more into stocks. I'm a big fan of Tesla. So that would be my approach after this bull run, and I'll think about it then. However, for now, I think this bull run is definitely exciting me a lot, and I'm quite keen to make as many multiples as I can.
And, you know, dare I say, you're a free person at the moment. So, you know, you've got kind of living under a roof, secure housing. I'm assuming no partner / kids at this stage, or maybe a partner, you don't have any dependents. So you are in a pretty unique position, as opposed to, you know, someone who's in their mid 30s, might have a partner, might have some kids. So, you know, if you're that person listening with dependents, then the way you think and the way you strategize would be a little bit risk averse. Dare I say, day trading won't be your full-time gig. And granted, that's not the full-time gig for AG either, but I think he devotes a lot of his time. Now, I guess, what about super, right? I mean, every time I speak to people about financial independence, and right at the start of this episode, you did mention your aim is to stop trading time for income and hopefully generate enough income that generates more income, and hopefully, you know, do it because you like it and work in an industry that you like and enjoy rather than have to pay the bills, which I completely support. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. The only difference for me is that I'll still be a doctor until I die, and I'll still probably be seeing patients or terrorizing medical students. That was a joke. If you're a medical student that I have terrorized or taught recently, so chill out. But you know what I'm talking about. I'll probably be doing some sort of teaching, right? Because it's something innate that I don't want to lose. But every time I talk to people with financial independence, super never really comes in, because the first thing they say is, Dev, why would I lock my money away for 20, 30, 40 years when I might need it earlier? So is that your viewpoint about super?
For sure, yeah. You might not like this response because I might answer the same way. For now, I still work a full-time job, and that obviously pays me super. I don't plan on retiring any earlier than the next 5 years, even if I'm in a position where I'm able to, because I would still want to work until at least 30, because why not, if I can just make even more money? I hope that by the time I do quit my full-time job, I have a net worth that allows me to think more into things like super, put it away into an account for when I am older and lock it away for 20, 30 years. But as of now, everything I make, I diversify into the portfolio I just recently mentioned, and I don't really think too much about super outside of what my full-time job pays me.
Yeah. So essentially, your compulsory 11% super, you take that because it's free money, but you don't add anything to it or maximize it to top it up to 27,500, whereas your relative that avidly listens might be in a different phase of life and they might be doing exactly that. So what is your savings rate then? So, you know, what are we talking about yearly income for you, excluding your profits from day trading and crypto? What, can I ask, what is your gross yearly income as a 24-year-old?
Yeah, for sure. So purely from my consulting job, I make $100,000. And then as for day trading, I make $1,000 per week. And that's with a $10,000 account. That $1,000 is usually my I guess, what I use for everyday expenses week to week. And then as for the six-figure account that I have in crypto on my ledger or on my hardware wallet, that grows every day. Sometimes it'll be up by 10K. Sometimes it might be down by 10K. That one I just don't think about, and I won't think about until maybe we're nearing the top of the bull market and it's time to take some profits. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Right. But your 100K that you earn every year, gross income, are you saying most of that you save and then use it for your day trading habit, or you save most of that and put it into ETFs, or you save most of that and buy crypto and put it into your hard wallet? So where does that 100K go into? How much do you save of that and where does that go?
Yeah. So with the 100K, when I get my monthly paycheck, a very big chunk of that goes towards my mortgage. And then whatever I have left, I'll usually put about 60% of the remainder into my day trading account. And then whatever I have left outside of my expenses for that month will be put into my ETF, which DCAs every month.
Right. Okay. So 60% of your income net after paying your mortgage goes to your day trading account. So that's a decent chunk of change. So it's not as if it's more money here. And really, the minority of the net income that you left over after your mortgage goes to traditional investments, right? And I guess you're 24. Do you want to be done by 40? Is that your plan? And by the time you turn 40, no trading time for income, completely live off your investments, tax minimization strategies, maybe self-managed super, whatever it is, or, you know, 40, 16 years away, and you say, Dev, that's ridiculous. I want to get to that by I'm 30.
I love my job. I still enjoy it. I just don't like how I'm tied down and have to work maybe from 9 to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. So I would definitely want to be able to be in a position where I don't have to rely on it. So ideally, yeah, before 30, I don't rely on my job. Maybe I even switch to part-time. And then, yeah, definitely before 40, the goal would be to not have a mainstream corporate job and manage my investments, which I would hope by 40 years old would be more property and less crypto.
So you kind of have an exit strategy out of your current lifestyle, and the exit strategy tends to rely a little bit on the traditional investing avenues. And I can see why you say you're not a massive bull on day trading or crypto. You're just using that as a means to get to an end, and get to an end is financial independence, right? I guess the last question I have before we finish up, and thank you for your time, we've probably gone a little bit over time, but it's been really interesting talking to someone like yourself, is because you do that crypto day trading or, you know, swing trading, whatever it is, when you do these trades buy and sell, I mean, on average frequency wise per week, I mean, how many trades are you doing in terms of buying and or selling? What's your average?
Yeah, this is a great question, actually. So I try to take one trade a day and ideally open up that trade before New York market, and hopefully within New York market, it hits take profit, or it, you know, gets triggered in and stopped out if it has to. On the week, I'll take about five trades, and most profitable traders will have a winning rate of 60%. And if you do all the mathematics around it with two risk to reward ratio, so every $100 I risk on a trade, I aim to win $200. After all that, it comes out to around $1,000 a week with a $10,000 account if you're winning three out of the five trades. Well, I think I may have got the maths a little bit wrong there, but I think you get the point. Yeah, that's essentially how I work. And then, yeah, as the account size grows, I might even bring the trading frequency down to about twice a week. It just really depends on what the market is giving you.
So then how do you account for the capital gains, right? Because you're obviously on average crystallizing your profits. Do you have like a trading account that sort of does all this for you for tax time? Because, I mean, I have enough trouble trying to bloody collate tax statements, which most of them are automated because my life is quite simple, but even then it's a pain in the bum. How do you do that? Or do you have a system to automate that within your trading account?
I don't have a system to automate that. And that's, I guess that's probably where a lot of the bears or the people who don't like crypto feast is that tax and regulation is a very gray area. So that's something that I'm looking to get into a lot more in terms of when I actually realize my gains. But as I was saying earlier, all the profits I make from day trading, as risky as it is, I book into my hardware wallet. So they're never actually realized as gains into my bank account as AUD. And therefore, I haven't really told anyone about it, or I guess the tax man doesn't know about it. But when I do go to realize those, then I will definitely need, I think, an accountant or someone to help me with paying my taxes and doing all that fun stuff.
Which means you need to keep records of when you actually put it into your hard wallet, right? Because that's the price that you kind of crystallize. And I mean, because obviously the ATO does all of its accounting and, you know, numbers using currency in the traditional format, so AUD. You can't lodge your BTC. You can't lodge your tax returns in BTC, I suppose. Now, a few ATO workers do listen to my podcast, by the way. So unfortunately, AG has been outed. So technically, ATO don't know, but practically they now do. But I see what you're saying. So essentially, you are keeping in its own form, and you're not really changing the form structure from BTC, and therefore you're not really selling it and converting it to traditional AUD or USD. So therefore, at the moment, you're sort of off the radar a little bit. But presumably, you have to keep pretty accurate records, right? I mean, 10 years later, when you do crystallize these and you do want to sell up and you do want to convert some of that to fiat, then the ATO would want their piece of the pie.
Yeah, for sure. And no, I definitely do plan on paying all my taxes and doing all that good stuff. As I've talked to enough people in my network who are in crypto who have tried getting around taxes, and it just does not work out good, and then they've actually had to pay more taxes than they otherwise would have. So yeah, you're right. And I think, yeah, I would plan on realizing all my gains before the end of the bull market. So my time frame would be about 2 years. And every time I DCA into, I have a nice big file of how much money I've put into a coin, how much I've profited on it or lost on it. So yeah, when all that is realized, I'll fill it into my Excel. And then hopefully, I would hope that an accountant is able to use that, calculate everything they need, and then tell me how much tax I owe.
Yeah. So you do have some sort of Excel spreadsheet where you keep records of this, kind of like a tradesperson might have a logbook of their kilometers that they've driven, and they have an Excel spreadsheet for that, which is really what ATO really wants. They want some sort of record keeping. For the traditional investors, you know, and I don't get sponsored, but I've heard this company called ShareSite, I think it is, and they do that all automatically, I think, for the traditional investors in ETFs or shares, and they calculate the dividends, they calculate the losses, the capital gains. Now, I only invest using Vanguard, so they kind of all do it for me. So at the end of the year, financial year, I just get like an email saying your tax statement's ready to go, and that automatically gets sent to the tax agent. But the crux is, yeah, I think that they would need some sort of records. Now, that's good. So we've covered a fair bit. If that's okay, AG, I'll just summarize, right? I mean, you're 24, have a traditional job in the finance industry, doing work from home 9 to 5, which is great. And you have a part-time, you know, sole trading business, let's call it, into day trading, which is split between stocks and also cryptocurrency. And part of that is use leverage. And you're really into swing trading. You've done scalping, but you don't really like that. And we've talked a fair bit of concepts for those listeners, everything from arbitrage to leverage to debt to blockchain to cryptocurrency to fiat currency to conversions, hard wallets. I mean, that's really, really detailed things that people need to do their own research on. And I have done, you know, very superficial sort of episodes on it in the past. So it's very interesting, and really appreciate that your mutual relative friend, you know, reached out to you, to reach out to me. And the interesting realistic assessment for me is, as a 24-year-old, you're ahead of most graduating doctors. Now, it may well be that the doctors, as they do more and more training and become consultants, as your relative is one, they may overtake your income, but that's going to take them 10, 15 years. And hopefully what you're saying, if everything works out in that 10, 15 years, you're done, which is really exciting. And I really wish you well and congratulations on where you are at the moment and really wish you well for the future. So really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Dev. It's been an absolute honor to be on here as well. And I think I've learned a lot as well from the perspective of a crypto critic and understanding what valid points you have against it. So yeah, it's been good.
So, I mean, my sort of feeling about these sort of things is, you know, online, I cop a fair bit of flack. I'm actually part of a Facebook Doctors for Cryptocurrency BTC Facebook group, believe it or not. I don't know why, but every now and again, I troll, they troll, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I'm not against diversity of investments. And fundamentally, I believe in the capitalistic markets. And fundamentally, I think making money and investing and learning and improving your financial literacy is the primary goal of this channel. And fundamentally, I believe in that. And I believe in people going out there, trying things, learning new things, enjoying what they do and making money ethically, legally, and obviously not in a crooked way. So that's fundamentally. Whenever there's a whiz-bang thing, you know, I sort of put it down in a very basic way is that, well, this is Dev Raga in the year 2024 and Dev Raga eats, sleeps, showers, brushes his teeth, drives an EV, lives in a house, uses utilities, works in healthcare. So this is my life. Dev Raga has family, has friends, has colleagues. This is my life. And every day of my life, and actually I'm sort of speaking to you, but speaking to the audience, every day of my life, I get up and I do things. And I think about what I use every single day and I invest in that. I use utilities. I use drink water. I eat food. I consume products. I consume services. I consume infrastructure. And I use healthcare and work in it. So these are the things that I invest in, and I invest in everything called the index, right? And to me, that's a very easy, practical way of looking at things. So when people come to me and say, hey, what do you think about crypto, blockchain, invest in this? And I'm like, well, I don't do that every day. So I find it very hard to get my head around it. But having said that, you know, I'm technically a millennial, but I'm starting to feel old because, you know, when I was your age or even younger as a teenager, I was, you know, I was sort of potentially saying similar things and my elders were like, oh, Dev, you're nonsense, you know, the smartphone or the credit card or, you know, online banking, right? I mean, in 20 years' time, you know, we've come a long way. And I reckon in 20 years' time, I'll probably be listening to this if I'm still around, which I will be because I'm a millennial. Hopefully I'm not dead by then, touch wood. But hopefully other people listening to this and say, well, either Dev was right or Dev was an idiot and completely wrong. In 20 years' time, BTC becomes the dominant currency of the world or becomes the dominant, you know, investment in the world and has great utility. And if that happens, I'd be very happy for those investors and I would accept that I was wrong. And I just didn't have the vision to look 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead or even 100 years ahead. And that's fine. But hopefully in 20 years' time, AG, I'm sailing on my own yacht, hopefully my private jet with my Bata slippers. I don't know if you follow me online. I love my Bata slippers and I'm sure your relative would understand. Any final words from you from a trading perspective?
Yeah, I guess one final thing that I forgot to touch on. My longer term plans is I'm starting a small business, or I guess a little private group where I provide a lot of learning opportunities for people. So that's something that I would love to flare out given over the next 5-10 years and maybe step away from the more risk on approach in crypto trading and day trading and maybe focus more on indices and stock trading. So that's something that I'm trying to flare out. Hopefully I can work on in throughout the bull market.
No, fair enough. Too easy. And with that, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. This was an interview with AG, and I appreciate his time and to discuss some of the concepts in day trading, in stocks, and also cryptocurrency. Now, remember, if you like what you listen, if you follow me, if you want to follow me, if you want to spread the message of financial literacy and education and learning and entertainment, then subscribe, spread the word, leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast or whatever platform you may be using, or leave a 5-star rating on all of the platforms. That's even better. And please leave a positive review, because the more reviews you leave, the better it is for people to find this channel. And if you've already left a review, fantastic. If you haven't, what are you waiting for? Leave a positive review and a 5-star rating. My name's Dev Raga, and this is Dev Raga Personal Finance. And this was an interview with AG on day trading and cryptocurrency. And until next time, please make sure you stay safe.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work, and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.